You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Horses Equine Innovators Podcast, sponsored by Zoetis. I'm your host, Stephanie Church, editorial director at thehorseandthehorse.com. Every day, researchers at universities and other institutions around the world are examining new ways to care for and understand our horses. In this podcast series, we talk to those innovators to learn more about their work. Our guest for this episode is Dr. Kara Brown. Dr. Brown is assistant professor of equine sports medicine and rehabilitation at the University of Pennsylvania New Bolton Center. Welcome, Dr. Brown.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So to start, can you explain what osteoarthritis is in horses, please, and why it's such a common challenge for equine athletes?
Yeah, absolutely. So osteoarthritis is a progressive degenerative disease in joints, and it classically involves damage to the cartilage. That's the tissue that kind of overlies the joint surface and allows for that smooth gliding of the bones in the joint against each other. But it actually affects a lot of other parts of the joint too, things like the bone underneath the cartilage, which is called the subchondral bone, and the inner lining of the joint capsule that's called the synovium. And as time continues and without a appropriate management, there's kind of progressive damage to all of these tissues. And that often results in kind of more and more severe pain and lameness. Mm-hmm. And what makes this such a challenge is that cartilage, unlike tissues like bone, is really, really bad at healing when it's injured. So cartilage doesn't have a good blood supply like other tissues. And blood supply is really important in the delivery of cells that kind of remove damaged tissue and help grow new tissue in the early stages of healing. So instead of healing like a bone would when it's fractured, they tend to heal pretty well as long as they're uncomplicated. These injuries, unfortunately, tend to progress instead of repair.
Okay, thank you. And so what are the primary factors that contribute to the development and progression of osteoarthritis in performance horses?
Yeah, so because horses are athletes, osteoarthritis usually develops just kind of as a repetitive stress syndrome on the joint, just kind of like human athletes. But it can also come from things like direct trauma to the cartilage and to the bone underneath. So, you know, things like a sudden misstep, or even from an injury to a soft tissue structure that's within or supporting the joint. And without addressing those injuries early, progression of osteoarthritis can be really, really rapid.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Where have traditional treatments for osteoarthritis, such as NSAIDs and corticosteroids, fallen short in addressing joint degeneration in horses?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So first of all, I should say that I do think that those traditional therapies for osteoarthritis, like systemic anti-inflammatories and, you know, intra-articular or joint injections with corticosteroids, do still have their place. You know, I still use them in my practice sometimes, but they do have limitations for sure. So NSAIDs like bute and banamine work by blocking enzymes that are responsible for making some of those pro-inflammatory proteins. But they also, at the same time, often block enzymes that are important protein, that make important proteins for normal organ function. So things like blood flow to the kidneys and to the GI system. And that means that over time, there's going to be a risk of injury to these organs. And that means that even if these medications work really effectively, which often they do, we don't really recommend that horses be on them for a really long time. And we're often looking for kind of more focused and targeted therapies. And so that's kind of where corticosteroids came in. They are really potent and very effective, and we can inject them into the joints. They're very highly anti-inflammatory, and they're usually pretty good at improving pain from arthritis. But we have found that, unfortunately, over time, corticosteroids, when injected directly into the joint, can be toxic to the cartilage, meaning that with repeated use, we actually might worsen kind of that underlying disease, which we don't want to do. The other thing about corticosteroids is that even though we're using them locally, they do still have a systemic effect on the horse. And so because of this, we worry about their potential for causing adverse effects. Laminitis is probably the one that we worry about the most and that probably our owners are most aware of. And this is a particular concern in horses that already have a risk factor for laminitis. So specifically horses with metabolic diseases, things like Cushing's disease and insulin resistance. And we deal with these horses with relative frequency, I would say. So, you know, there was a real space because these were kind of the things that we traditionally used for different types of management options for osteoarthritis, kind of aside from those medications.
Okay, thank you. So could you give an overview of the novel options that have emerged for managing equine osteoarthritis, and how do they differ from those conventional therapies that you described?
Yeah, there are a ton of new therapies, which is really helpful for us. Probably the most commonly used non-corticosteroid therapies can be divided into orthobiologic therapies. So those are things that we get from biologic substances like cells and tissues. And these are things like platelet-rich plasma, autologous conditioned serum, autologous protein solution, and alpha-2 macroglobulin, and then stem cell therapies. But we also have viscoelastic substances, so things like polyacrylamide hydrogels. Those we think might provide some kind of longer lasting lubrication to the joint. And then kind of depending on what formulation of hydrogel you're using, some studies have shown that they can either integrate into the synovial membrane or kind of the lining of the joint capsule, which might reduce kind of joint capsule stiffness, which we think plays a role in kind of the pain associated with osteoarthritis. Or they can attach the cartilage at the joint surface to improve that sliding action. And in terms of how they're really different from those traditional therapies, there are two kind of main reasons. One is that unlike corticosteroid options or therapies, these are intended not to be damaging to the cartilage. So our hope is that we're not risking worsening the disease by using them in the joint. And the second is that the goal is actually to be disease modifying, meaning that you're trying to treat the underlying disease, while things like NSAIDs and corticosteroids, for the most part, are symptom modifying. So you're just trying to manage symptoms like pain.
All right. Thank you for explaining that. Mm-hmm. Could you explain how orthobiologic therapies such as platelet-rich plasma, stem cell treatments, and autologous protein solution devices work to improve joint health?
Yeah, absolutely. So starting with platelet-rich plasma, that's PRP. It's a product that has a high concentration of platelets, as it sounds by the name. And these platelets release primarily growth factors. They release other things, but primarily growth factors. And these are therapeutic because they can help control inflammation. And they also stimulate cells to kind of come to the site of injury to help with repair. Autologous protein solution, or APS, is a product that has a higher concentration both of platelets and white blood cells. Those white blood cells release cytokines, and probably the best known cytokine, it's a protein that we think that is important to its function, is called interleukin-1 receptor antagonist protein, or IRAP. This cytokine blocks kind of one of the major pathways for inflammation in arthritis. Stem cells are a type of cell that can self-renew and can differentiate into different cell types. We usually use mesenchymal stem cells for musculoskeletal disease. These differentiate primarily into connective tissues. And you can get stem cells from a lot of different places. For horses, we usually get them from adipose tissue, which is fat, or bone marrow. And the other main difference is that they can either be autologous, so from your own horse, the horse that's been injured, or allogenic from another horse. And they work to manage musculoskeletal disease in a couple ways. So just like the PRP and APS, they are anti-inflammatory. They're immunomodulatory, so they help regulate the body's own immune response. And they also help recruit other cells to the site of injury to help with repair.
All right, thank you. Some of those are a mouthful. In terms of
yes,
sure. So, what recent research findings have you seen regarding the efficacy and safety of these approaches?
Yeah, there's a lot of work on these products recently. One that I could highlight is actually by one of my colleagues, Dr. Kyla Ortfed, on the effects of that APS ProStride device on experimentally induced synovitis. Synovitis is just inflammation of that inner lining of the joint capsule. And we think that this might be synovitis, that is, might be an early contributing factor to osteoarthritis. So having a product that can manage that inflammation could be really helpful, obviously, in early interventions for osteoarthritis. And this study showed that for horses that underwent joint injections with APS that had that experimentally induced synovitis, when you looked at the synovium grossly and then under a microscope, so their histology scores, there was a significant improvement, or the appearance of those areas looked significantly better in horses that underwent that APS therapy compared to those that didn't, that ProStride therapy. So that's really good information for us. On a slightly different note, the kind of study or the kind of work that I do or that I've been doing recently is looking at the effects of medications that are commonly used in combination with obtaining blood for these blood-based products. So, you know, making sure that we're still getting an effective product when we're drawing blood from a horse that's had a different medication.
Okay.
And one of the ones that we really wanted to focus on was NSAIDs, so things like butenbanamine, because a lot of those horses that are having musculoskeletal injuries that we want to give PRP or ProStride are also getting NSAIDs, butenbanamine, because they've been injured. And so we're trying to manage their pain in the meantime. And actually, those types of medications, NSAIDs, can alter things like platelet function. And in humans, we know that they can alter the composition of those cytokines and those growth factors and things like PRP. So we thought it was possible that by obtaining blood from horses that had been on butorbanamine and then processing it for PRP or ProStride, that the horses might actually be receiving a potentially less effective or an altered form of the substance. And so, you know, we want to avoid that. And what we found is that though there were some alterations in the concentrations just of the white blood cells and the platelets, when those drugs like butenbanamine and some other NSAIDs were given, no drug significantly altered the concentration. So the really important proteins, cytokines, and growth factors in the final PRP or in the ProStride product, either if we gave them a single dose of an NSAID or if we gave it for a 6-day period. As long as you gave them 6 hours or as long as you drew the blood 6 hours after that single intravenous administration or gave them 24 hours after that longer oral dosing period. And we have a lot of other questions that we're working on answering regarding kind of the interaction of those commonly used medications and the composition of these products. So, you know, stay tuned for some more data.
Thank you. That sounds like really important research to have in hand. Did you know that your veterinarian can use your horse's own blood to help heal lameness? The ProStride APS regenerative medicine device is designed to help keep horses feeling and performing their best. Zoetis is always by your side in the barn, down the center line, and everywhere in between. How do these studies that you've described help the veterinarian in their recommendations to their clients?
Yeah, I mean, as veterinarians, we just always want to make sure that we're using these therapies in the most effective ways. So it's really helpful to know that in these situations, even with the administration of NSAID, so if you're out of the barn, you find out that the horse has been on an NSAID or that you have given an NSAID, we can still take blood for PRP and ProStride, assuming that you're giving that 6 hours and that 24 hours, knowing that you're not affecting the product and that you're still giving that horse kind of the best product possible. For owners and trainers, their goal is really to make sure that their horse is comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so now we know that their horses don't need to be withheld from the medications for really long periods of time prior to obtaining blood for the therapy. So I think that's probably what's most helpful for that group.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
So in your experience, how do these therapies impact the long-term joint health and performance of horses compared to conventional methods? I like to think of my horse who suffered a pasture injury a few years ago, fractured his sesamoid in a couple places.
Aww.
And we ultimately ended up pulling the chip out. And a few weeks to a couple months later, a veterinarian actually used the ProStride APS device.
Oh, great.
And, yeah. You know, my horse has been sound on that ankle ever since, or fetlock ever since.
That's awesome.
So
that's
anyway, I have some, you know, personal experience with it, but obviously yeah. You have all kinds of experience with it, using it day in and day out and seeing the results objectively and subjectively in your patients.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great story. I mean, in my experience, these definitely impact long-term joint health for these athletes because, you know, we're no longer limited to using intra-articular products that might damage cartilage long-term to try to keep these horses comfortable, especially in younger horses that are kind of just beginning their careers. I think it's a really helpful option. And we have some opportunity to try to slow the progression of osteoarthritis, which I think really translates to just a longer and better quality performance life for these horses, which is what we're aiming for.
That's wonderful. Thank you. So what challenges might veterinarians face when implementing these approaches in everyday clinical practice?
Yeah, I mean, one is just that there are a lot of options now. So it can be difficult to decide which product you want to use. There aren't a lot of comparative studies. And so that can be a little bit challenging. Probably the other big one is that all of these orthobiologics require some type of processing for the most part, whether it's something, you know, short like a centrifuge or something more advanced like culturing. You know, some of them require incubation overnight. But that said, there are more and more options available for practitioners in the field for using these stall sides. So I think this is an obstacle that we're very quickly overcoming.
Great, thanks. So, you know, you spoke to the importance of catching osteoarthritis earlier in our conversation. How critical is early detection of equine joint issues for the success of these methods? And what role do your advanced imaging techniques that you have available play?
Yeah, I mean, incredibly critical. Early detection is one of the most important things, I would say, in terms of managing these. Osteoarthritis is a vicious cycle. And once it's established, it is really, really difficult to slow because once the inflammation has started, there's the release of all these pro-inflammatory proteins that affects kind of all of the parts of the joint, the cartilage, the inner lining of the joint capsule, the bone under the cartilage. That all results in the release of enzymes that break down cartilage. And that, of course, is going to lead to more inflammation. So you just kind of end up in this, like I said, vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. And by catching those early, the goal is to decrease inflammation in that kind of forefront and slow that process so that you can preserve the joint for as long as possible. And so this is actually part of why identifying the source of lameness really accurately through things like blocking and imaging is really important. And kind of as you allude to, in many traditional options for imaging, so things like radiographs, we don't always identify osteoarthritis in its early stages. So for instance, if just the cartilage is affected, which is not something that you can see radiographically, or if there are just really subtle changes in the bone, we could definitely be missing early osteoarthritis with radiographs. But with the advent of a lot of these newer or a lot of these other modalities, I should say, they're not new. These are something that have things that have been used for a long time in horses and for a longer time in humans. Things like computed tomography or CT that allows us to look at bone cross-sectionally, so slices through bone, so you can see much more subtle changes. And then functional imaging, so things like magnetic resonance imaging or MRI or positron emission tomography or PET scan, which is actually something that we have been using more recently, I would say, in horses. With those, we can see early and more subtle signs of osteoarthritis that we would have missed in other forms of imaging. And that allows us to intervene on the early side. Because as I said, once osteoarthritis is well established, no matter what you're using, it can be very difficult to treat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Could you share a case study or example where a regenerative medicine device significantly improved a horse's joint function and overall performance?
Sure. I honestly probably have too many to name, but one off the top of my head that I can think of is a horse named Harley. So when I first saw Harley, he was a 27-year-old thoroughbred gelding who was still in ridden work with a history of a recent onset lameness in his hind limb. It was a pretty severe lameness. We were able to localize his pain to the right stifle through blocking, and through a number of diagnostics, we identified a meniscal injury. So that's an injury to one of the soft tissue structures within the stifle. And as a consequence, he had a lot of inflammation in that joint. And in these cases with meniscal injuries, it's not infrequent that we see progressive osteoarthritis as a consequence of that soft tissue injury, actually, mm-hmm. just given the amount of inflammation present in the joint. And Harley was pretty uncomfortable. So it was really critical that we provide the joint with some support from an anti-inflammatory perspective and also try to improve his pain. Unfortunately, as many older horses do, Harley also had Cushing's disease and pretty marked, I would say, Cushing's disease. He was quite affected by it. And we were really reluctant, therefore, to reach for something like a corticosteroid, given that he had a higher risk for developing laminitis as a consequence, which of course we never want to do. So for this horse, we used ProStride in the joint to provide anti-inflammatory properties without the risk of laminitis mm-hmm. to support that joint and kind of achieve the goal of decreasing inflammation and trying to improve his pain. And he's doing great. He did really well. He took a little time off. And I actually just checked in with his owner, and at 30 now, wow. He's still out being ridden a little bit. And yeah, in terms of prolonging, you know, the life of these horses and their comfortable life, I think these management options are very, very helpful.
I love that. That's such a good practical example. Nice job getting him back on.
Yeah, he's, well, his owner did a phenomenal job with him as well. Mm-hmm. So we rely a lot on owners in terms of their management of these horses too. Mm-hmm.
For sure. All about the compliance. So
yes, very, very much so.
Mm-hmm. So I typically ask our guests who are innovators in equine veterinary medicine about where they see their area of study 10 to 20 years from now. How do you see research and technology evolving to further advance our understanding and treatment of poor performance in equine athletes?
Gosh, that's a great question. You know, I'm interested in a lot of aspects of poor performance that interact with musculoskeletal disease. So these high performance athletes can have a number of different body systems that are affected that can cause poor performance. So things like, you know, endocrine disorders, Cushing's disease, insulin resistance, neurologic disease. And I think there's going to be more and more information about how musculoskeletal disease are affected by disease processes in other parts of the body. I think we know in humans that there is a lot of interplay between these different areas. And probably the other area would be rehabilitation. It's a particular interest of mine. And, you know, with the advent of more and more practitioners with advanced training in rehabilitation, so things like being boarded in the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation, that's ACVSMR, that's what I'm boarded in. There's a lot of really, really good research being done on rehabilitation protocols and the types of tools that we use for rehabilitation. And I think this is really going to make a massive difference in understanding how to best help support these horses with things like osteoarthritis from a rehabilitation perspective. It's something that we know in humans and in canines, and I think anecdotally a little bit more so in horses, is really critical for their recovery. And I think, you know, a goal of having really data-driven rehabilitation practices is going to be one that hopefully we achieve and continue to explore, I guess, in our equine species.
I really look forward to seeing the advancements in this area. So is there anything else you would like to add to what we've covered today?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that one of the things I'd like to highlight is like I said, just the necessity of accurate diagnosis, which sometimes can take some time. I always tell my owners, if I could ask your horse where it hurt, this would be a much faster process, but unfortunately I can't. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it takes a little bit of time to figure out, but as you can see, knowing exactly what you're treating and how you want to treat it and all the advanced imaging and things like that are really supported by a very accurate diagnosis, including, you know, lameness evaluation, blocking, things like that. So just put a plug in for those types of diagnostics.
Wonderful. Thank you. Dr. Brown, where can listeners learn more about your work?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So if you do want to learn more about the work that I do, you can visit the Penn Vet website. That's www.vet.upenn.edu. You can click on faculty at the top, and then you can find my name, Kara Brown, and you can see all the research studies that I've done. There's a portion on my areas of interest and my contact information if you have any further questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we will provide links in the show notes as well. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brown.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
I also want to thank our sponsor, Zoetis. For more from The Horse, visit thehorse.com, sign up for our newsletters, or look for Ask the Horse Live wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. If you like this podcast, please do all the things you would do to support it. Rate, subscribe, review, and share it with your friends. Please join us next time as we talk with the horse industry equine innovators.